What is good, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Malaga Drive Hoops Betting Podcast. As usual, it's your boy Caleb, here to talk some basketball, here to talk game two of the Celtics and the Dallas Mavericks. For those of you that don't know, I was in Europe for the past 3 weeks, so I honestly have not watched a lot of basketball. I did preview the series, the pod before, wasn't able to catch much of game one as I was on a flight and then got in second half, and you know, you get off a 12-hour flight, you're gassed, you're going through immigration and shit, but still plenty to talk about for game two. Last thing before we get into the pod itself, some of you may be wondering, Caleb, what are you gonna do in the off season? There's no slates to bet. Well, one, we'll be going through each team, kind of like a review thing slash a preview for the following year, kind of like a almost like a performance review, except it's just me. I'm just reviewing how each team did. We'll have some betting from it, but it'll be some betting. We'll go through, you know, what they were, ATS, how their season went down, what we can expect next year, and that way we just feel prepared going into next year. And then drafts coming up too. We'll probably do a couple pods on that as well. Going to be some money to be made in the draft as well, but obviously it is a bit slower. It is a bit slower, as you guys can probably tell. You know, even from it was a little weird for me, right? Because I signed with Believe right when the playoffs were starting, and that's usually my least active point. So hang in there. We'll when the regular season hits back up, we'll be every day. But for now, it'll be a little bit more sporadic. But we'll be here. Let's get into game two tomorrow. The Mavs are 7-point dogs after getting blasted at home or on the road. We talked about it before the series. I felt like if I had to pick, I would pick the Celtics. Like, it was just like, pick who wins, nothing else involved, no value involved, just like who's more likely to win. I'd pick Celtics just barely. But given the series odds, I like the Mavs. They were small, they were like 180, 170. Now after game one, L plus 320, and you guys see it all the time, right? And there are times where, you know, a team gets blasted in game one, and it is a little bit of a foreshadowing for how the series is going to go down. But I feel like more often than not, a team gets blasted in game one, and it just leads to mass, you know, takes, and I get it, right? That's kind of the world we live in right now. But it's one game, and for as good as the Celtics team is, they can be beat, and especially with the way that the style of basketball in which they play, which is so jump shot dependent, the Mavs are going to win a couple of these too. So I personally, if you're a Mavs fan, if you're a Mavs ticket holder, series ticket holder, I wouldn't freak out. Obviously not an ideal way to go, but it kind of feels a little bit like that OKC series, right, where game one in OKC, the Thunder blasted the Mavs, and it was kind of like, oh, this is gonna be the Thunder series, and then the Mavs just came back in game two. And I think that's what gives me confidence, is the mixture of the Celtics having legitimately, they've lost a home game in two of the three series, and even against the Pacers, we talked about it, they essentially lost that game one until Indiana gave it right back, right? Like, Indiana has the ball multiple times up three with less than 35 seconds left. And yes, Kristaps is back, and Kristaps is huge, and he played a great basketball game, and he adds just a dynamic to this team that they don't have without him. But I think for me, I just have confidence in this Dallas team, one in Luka, right? Like, it's not that I – Kyrie as well, but Luka is just he's mastered the game of basketball. He really is. And when you have him on your side, you're going to win a couple of these games. And then on top of that, the way that Jason Kidd has navigated these playoffs, I think I'm on the record saying Jason Kidd's not that great of a coach. But I think, as with Mazzulla, right, like, just like players are developing, coaches are developing. And it's not like a coach comes in, you see who he is, and that's just kind of who he always will be. And you got to give Jason Kidd credit for beating three much different teams in the Clippers, the Wolves, and the Thunder, and being able to adjust to what each series required of it. So I like that. With all that being said, guys, I obviously, you know where I'm getting. I like the Mavs tomorrow plus 7. The Mavs have been really, really good off of losses in the whole playoffs. As a whole, my fault. A little wordy there, but let me pull it up. Don't take my word for it. So, okay. So they start the playoffs with an L to the Clippers, game one. They lost game one in – they got one game one in Minnesota, but they lost game one against the LA Clippers. What happens? They win game two, cover the spread. Lose game four at home, right? So it's not just on the road. At home, like, they lose game four. What happens next game? Dominate, blow out the Clippers in LA. They lose game one to OKC, win game two, cover the spread. Lose game four at home, so very similar to the Clippers. Lose game four at home in a game they honestly should have won. And then they go to OKC and win game five. Minnesota, they lose game four at home, come out, win game five in Minnesota. So they have not – they have literally covered and won every single game off of a loss. Obviously a different team, obviously a tough spot. But I really like the Mavs plus 7 tomorrow. And I don't mind sprinkling on the money line as well. Again, I can't get too deep into the specifics of matchups and this and that. And I feel like a lot of times, especially in the playoffs, there's a lot of over analysis. Sometimes you can overdo it. Sometimes you really can overdo it. Oh, this matchup, this, that, this. And sometimes that does matter and comes into it. But to me, man, you have a Dallas Mavericks team who is playing as good of basketball as anyone. Obviously, right? They're coming out of the tough Western Conference. They've bounced back of every single L that they've taken in the playoffs against three different really good teams in their own ways. They've done it at home, bouncing back at home after a loss. They've done it on the road, bouncing back after a loss. And like, to me, there's just, yeah, the Celtics are really good and they had a great regular season. But to me right now, if you really just purely look at the body of work, I don't think there's that big of a difference between these two teams. And again, I'm operating as someone who hasn't seen game one, right? So obviously you may think a little bit differently. You watch game one, you see the Celtics smack them up. Obviously you're going to feel a certain way, but I would not overreact. And to me, 7 is plenty of value. I thought game one, the line would come in around 5. It came in at 6, 6.5. It bumps up a little bit from the game one result. I like Dallas tomorrow plus 7. Plus 215 on the money line. Now let's get into some props. These are not my props. You know, you always want to do your best case. No matter how smart you are, no matter how much you watch basketball, there's always different ways that you can learn. You can always learn. And so here's what some other people are on. There's a man by the name of Joe Delera, a pretty sharp guy. He's mostly props, but he does do spreads. He's on Jason Tatum over 14.5 rebounds and assists. Shout out Joe Delera. And here's his reason. Tatum has been an incredible rebounder throughout the playoffs and has seen an uptick to over 10 boards per game over the last two playoffs. The biggest swing here for the inclusion of dimes is his potential assists. In game one, Tatum logged 5 assists on 14 potentials while kicking out on 60% of his drives, and the defense continued to collapse on him as he created for his teammates. And then he goes on to say more and more and more about the rebounds. And just, yeah, he's been rebounding at a high rate. But I think that's interesting just in terms of assists, right? He finishes with 5 assists, and so the line's at 5.5, but he had 14 potentials, right? But I think the thing with this is there's two different things with this. One, and this is, in my eyes, matters a little bit less, is you have the whole Jason Kidd comment on – that was very interesting to me, right? You in the world of a lot of, and again, some coaches don't give a fuck, and I love it. But in the world of being PC and not rocking the boat, Jason Kidd outwardly after a loss said Jaylen Brown is their best player. Outwardly, it's a little bit of gamesmanship, and I'm not even saying that he doesn't believe it, but a lot of coaches are not going to say that even if they do believe it. And so that's just an interesting wrinkle to throw out. Now, Jason Tatum is a mature young man, mature basketball player. He's been doing this for, you know, he's only 26, but he's been doing this for a while. I don't think that changes his approach, right? And on top of that, JB and him have been hearing shit for a while. You ask people 3 years ago, they were there were people 3 years ago saying they should break up, which is, again, you're just going to get a lot of bullshit from the media. But it is interesting to think about in terms of, does that fire him up? Does that change the way, you know, he approaches his game? I doubt that. The second thing is, and this is the problem with a lot of times with props, especially in series, right? Like, it's one thing in the regular season, but I think even more so in series where you see something happen in game one and then you automatically think that is what's going to happen in game two. He had 14 potential assists. The defense played him this way. He was a lot of drive and kick. And you just kind of think, all right, that's what's going to happen. And I know I'm going against what I'm presenting the information, but I'm also presenting why I may not be on that is things change, right? I don't think that Boston's going to blow them out again. So why would I think that the games, the individual stats are going to play out the same, right? So, but at the same time, 14 potentials is a lot. 14 potentials is a lot. And Jason Tatum, 5.5 seems like a decent look. The other way that they're going is Luka under, just because they switched a lot, which led to a lot of one-on-one matchups. He only, I think, had 7 or 8 potential assists and only 1 actual assist. Again, it's very, very highly unlikely that he goes and just gets 1 assist again. Like, that's not going to happen. But there's credence to the under 8.5. I'll just read it again. We'll read it again. We've got Luka Doncic has been leaned on heavily as a scoring option in game one with a 37% usage rate. Boston switched everything, and this slowed down the offensive process for Dallas, but it also continued to give Luka matchups that he considered exploitable in isolation. As a result, 1 assist on 7 potentials. Unrealistic to expect Luka to have 1 assist in game two. Obviously, yep. And the Mavericks need to not only make schematic and tactical changes, but they need to convert on those. I butchered that, but you know what I mean. This will be easier said than done when you consider that Boston has allowed Indiana to continue to torch them on the interior, and they just didn't care because they outmathed them in the 3-versus-2 battles. Luka is always a threat to post a triple-double, but there are too many variables for us to back a significant uptick in dimes. So I get that, right? Like, Boston comes out in game one and they switch everything. And, right, there's for those that don't know, you get a pick set on the guy's defender. You have 2 different ways you can play it. You have multiple different ways, but the main 2 ways are, 1, you switch. So the guy that is screened just switches onto the big, and the guy who is guarding the big switches onto Luka. That is what Boston did. Boston generally switches. They have a lot of switchy guys. Even their bigs are kind of switchy, like Al Horford. Or you can drop, which means the big stays kind of under the screen, and the guy who gets screened fights over, tries to get back in the picture. Once he gets back in the picture, the big drops back to the big. But he kind of plays in between, showing, you know. But regardless, the Boston was switching. Luka's like, you don't switch a big on me. And he attacked, and he didn't have very many assists. But I think also on top, you know, the Mavericks are not going to score that few of points. Again, you get this far. You don't overreact to 1-0, especially with a team that is showcased very, not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4 times that they are very much capable of handling their L's. Now, again, I still felt like, and I didn't watch much of the Minnesota series. I was in Europe with only YouTube TV, and YouTube TV doesn't work out there. I still felt like in the OKC, and this is a guy who bet the Mavericks, that PJ and Derrick Jones Jr. were playing a little bit over their head. But again, you're this far into it, like, I get why you ride with him, and I get why Mass fans have confidence in those two. Let's take a look at just the box score from game one. To me, though, it's like, it's hard because on the Mavericks side, right, you technically want to target Mavs just because they're the team that probably plays with a little bit more desperation, the team that makes more adjustments. The Mavericks are just very condensed with their production, right? It's like, it's Luka, it's Kyrie, and then everyone else kind of chips in, but you can't count on it. And then the Celtics is more spread out. Obviously, it's condensed to Jaylen and JT, But you know, Derek White, Kristaps Porzingis. So it's hard from a prop perspective, because with the Mavs, yeah, you know who it's going to be, but the lines are super high. Celtics, you don't really know who it's going to be. Kristaps, 20 points in 20 minutes. That was another storyline. I love Kristaps Porzingis. I've always been a Kristaps fan, if you followed me at all. I've talked about it many times. Like, if you drop Kristaps Porzingis in the NBA 30 years ago, they would freak out. He's essentially a 7'3 guard. He is a guard. He just happens to be 7'3. And so, obviously, you're big at that point. But it is incredible the skill level that he has at that size. He is a giant. He's a giant. Put the ball on the floor, shoot the hell out of it. And I want to make sure people understand, too, that is such a hard thing to do, to not play for, at this point, maybe a little bit under a month, but close to a month. You get dropped back into the NBA Finals in game one. You ball out in 20 minutes. So that's huge. Again, can you expect that every game? Probably not. But again, you're probably not getting 6-16 from Jason Tatum, right? And you look, they're just loaded, man. The Celtics are loaded. Anyways, we'll get to it. My favorite plays are the Mavs. I keep it simple. Take the Mavs +7. Can I guarantee they win this game? No, definitely not. But to me, 7 is just a tick too much. I would have this around 5, 5.5. And I don't hate sprinkling on the money line. Like, I do think this Mavs team, for all the reasons that we've talked about, are going to show up. And sometimes that's not even enough. Sometimes you show up and you still can't cover 7, but I think they cover 7. In terms of first quarter, first half, I'd stay away, right? Like, Boston has been really good in those situations. First quarter, first half, you're getting in shortish numbers. I'd probably say, wow, live as we're talking. As we're live on air, it moves down to 6.5. So, I again, for everything that we said, I still like 6.5. Would have liked 7. I wouldn't be surprised if it bumps back up, though. Right, like it'll fluctuate. There'll be some buyback on the Celtics at 6.5. This probably does get back to 7, but even if it doesn't, I do think 6.5 is a good look. +215 on the money line is a good look. Luka and them boys will be ready. And I also think, again, Kyrie's been kind of quiet in these playoffs, but he took 19 from a scoring perspective, I should say. But he took 19 shots, and you look in the Minnesota series. 30 points, 20 points, 33 points. And then he scored 16 points, did not shoot it well, and then scored 36 points in Minnesota the game after. So I don't mind some Kyrie props either. Points. Again, I get why people would be on Jason Tatum assists, or you just want to combine points and assists. I like that. I like Kyrie over 23.5 points. I like the Dallas Mavericks, and I appreciate you guys tuning in. Have a great rest of your weekend. Enjoy the game tomorrow. We're in the final days of NBA basketball. But these things get turned around quickly, man. Like, we'll have free agency on the way. We'll have the NBA draft. And then we have summer. Like, that. I love that about the NBA, right? Because in the MLB, it's like, all right, World Series is over. Then there's, like, pre-arbitration and arbitration. And there's some deals, but it's fairly quiet in terms of deals in the offseason. And even free agency is quiet. It might just be because I don't follow it as much. NFL, the most news comes from guys getting cut. Like, oh, we can't afford to pay you. You're getting cut, even though you're really good. The NBA, we go free agency. We go draft. We got free agency. We get off-season trades. And we get summer league. We get baby basketball from the kids, too, which I think is dope. And so, you know, at this point, we're recording, like, I generally don't bet Summer League, but I mean, I'm going to be watching it. We might as well talk about it. So we'll have plenty of stuff to talk about. But I love you guys. I appreciate y'all tuning in. Enjoy the game tomorrow. We'll be back. Let's check. Three is Wednesday. Yeah, they give them a lot of time. Makes sense. We'll be back Tuesday. All right, guys. Enjoy the game. I love you guys. Peace.